This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm super excited you're joining us today. We have a wonderful guest. She's a multi-time author. She's written for as a book editor for Cosmopolitan and Esquire. She's done wore many, many hats, and she's got her latest book, Social Animals. It's a novel by Camille Perry. So we're going to chat with Camille about the book Social Animals, and then we'll talk to her about writing. We won't let her off the hook until she tells us how she masters her craft and how she juggles balls in the air while wearing all those multiple hats. So it's going to be great fun, and you're going to learn a lot, and it'll be super. So everybody hang tight. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Join us now is author Camille Perry. She's the author of The Assistants and Katie Met Cassidy, as well as I mentioned, the book editor in the past for Cosmopolitan Esquire magazine. And she's got her latest book out. It's a novel called Social Animals. Camille, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, super excited to have you here. And I love the book, and I love the cover design. You know, I always say if you put even if it's not a dog book, if you put a dog on the cover, you've got a good chance of selling some books.
I hope you're right about that.
Just put one on there. But we'll be talking about animals and dogs. It's Social Animals, three women, one dog park. Things are about to get messy. Uh-oh. So tell us a little bit about the book and how it all came about.
So Social Animals, the novel, started out for me with two of the main characters, Val and Alex. It started out as a script that I was actually writing, that I started out writing as a sort of female buddy comedy where these two women came together to solve a crime. Over time, I realized that that script wasn't really working so well, but I really fell in love with the two characters of Val and Alex. So I plucked them out of that script, threw that in the garbage, and then decided to get back to what it is I really do, which is write novels. So I created a novel around those two characters, but that novel still kind of wasn't working. I couldn't really figure out the perfect setting. I didn't know what the perfect inciting incident was. It wasn't until I got my dog Pip and took her to the dog park for the first time that it was like a lightning bolt hit me. And I said, oh, I need to write a dog park novel. And that's when it all came together for me.
Nice, nice. So Pip gets the majority of the royalties is what I'm hearing.
Oh, she's in the form of kibble, of course.
That sounds great. It's amazing where how you start off, at least as a writer and author, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, you start off down one path, and all of a sudden you have to switch or you want to switch, and then just a light bulb comes off, which in this case is going to the dog park for the first time.
Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes as much as you try to plan these things out, and I am a planner by nature, and when it comes to writing, I do like to outline, and I always like to have a list, and I like to check things off my list. But you know, sometimes you just have to let fate take its course, which was sort of the case with this book for me.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we talk often on the show about writers being planners or pantsers, and you know, I'm definitely the latter. You know, I'm definitely holding on to my pants as I finish off the work. So.
I'm too anxious for that. I can't do it. I need to get everything done way ahead of time.
Nice, nice. Not me. A day before. I guess it dates back to school years, too. So I did all right, though. I'm all right. I'm doing okay, I think. So tell us then a little bit about the what the readers can expect from the book, maybe a little bit about the characters without giving it all away. and how you find out going to a dog park, you have a buddy or two, and then all of a sudden there's this great mess that happens.
Yeah. So the novel is from the points of view of three women, Val, Alex, and June. We start out with Val's point of view, and I think of her as sort of the anchor character. Val is hired by June's husband, Silas, to spy on her because he suspects that she's having an affair with someone at the dog park where she regulars, the dog park. So Val needs a dog to complete this job. And so she adopts this little dog, which is a Brussels Griffon, which is the same breed of dog that I'd have. And if you know anything about Brussels Griffons, they are a big dog in a little package. They think that they run the world. They are not the easiest dog for a first-time dog owner. So I thought that was perfect to give to Val, who really didn't really want a dog and is not an animal person by any means. So Val's got this dog who she names Cash, and she heads over to the dog park to try to figure out who June is having an affair with. Now, the next character we get is Alex. Alex is very mysterious at the beginning of the book. We don't know a whole lot about what her deal is. You'll learn more and more about Alex's intentions as the novel goes on. But the first thing you know about Alex is she goes to the dog park with a lot of secrets, and she's going there targeting June also. She's trying to get to June for some reason to get to Silas. We don't know the whole story yet, but we know that Alex is there under false pretenses. Now, June is the brightest, happiest lady of the three, and she has a very happy-go-lucky golden retriever. And June is sort of lonely, even though she's happy and bright on the outside. On the inside, she's feeling really isolated and she's feeling really lonely. So when these two new mysterious characters show up at the dog park, she's ripe for the picking. She thinks, wow, I'm going to make some new friends. And it looks on the surface like these are going to be genuine, wonderful people who want to get close to her, but she doesn't know everything that they're hiding. So there's a lot of secrets and lies that goes into this. And what ends up happening is sort of their fates kind of collide, all starting at the dog park.
Nice. Nice. I love how it all ties in with the dog park. And it's very true. I don't know if you take Pip to the dog park or not, but you know,
sure.
I think dogs are and animals in general are a great common denominator. It brings the world together. So I do see that. We see that when, especially like when COVID was in its prime or in its disaster years, where it maybe seemed like everybody in our neighborhood was getting dogs. So fortunately, they kept them.
That's exactly how I got my dog. I personally, like Val, my character Val, I didn't want a dog because I worked from home and my wife worked at an office long hours. And I always said, well, we can't get a dog because I'll be the one taking care of it all the time. Then COVID came around. My wife started working from home like everybody else. And that argument went right out the window. So that's how I ended up getting my dog Pip. And with all of the restrictions, you know, standing 6 feet apart and all of that, you know, having to be in outdoor spaces, bringing Pip to the dog park was really our only social life for a good amount of time. So I would really start to look forward to 5:30 every day when we would take her to the park and we'd see the same group of regulars. And I started to learn the park drama. I started to learn the politics of the place. I learned who had slept with who and who now stands on the opposite side of the park because they don't talk. And I thought, oh my God, what a cast of characters. I've definitely got to start taking notes.
Oh my gosh. Unbelievable. Yeah. You know, I find out that the thing I do, I mean, I'll blame myself for this for sure. Whenever I see a dog, obviously I want to see the dog. I want to pet the dog. I want to talk. I never remember the human companion's name. I always remember the dog's name.
Of course.
I will apologize. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but yeah, it makes me feel bad because some of my neighbors have been around for many, many years and I have to think twice about what their names are, but I know their dogs.
Isn't that so funny? I know. Even now, when I talked to my wife about it, I was like, so do you remember when Essie's mom said this? Or do you remember when Buster's dad did that? Because we can't remember what their actual names are.
That's right. Well, they're less important. They're secondary characters, as I'm sure you and your wife are with Pip. So
Absolutely. You're
just in the background providing the kibble and the treats. So.
100%.
Well, I love the dog park aspect of it. And the fact that it is, like I said, it's a common denominator. Oftentimes you don't get to know the people that well. It's sort of a surface level, like having a quick coffee with people on occasion. But in your book, in the novel Social Animals, you really delve into it and these people get to know each other. And then I think at the end, maybe perhaps if they had their choice, they wouldn't want to know each other.
Well, that's up for interpretation, and we'll let readers read through the book and decide how they feel at the end. But there's certainly a few twists and surprises at the end for the characters, and there is an element of suspense in the book, because one thing that we learn in the opening pages is there's a prologue, and we don't know quite who the prologue narrator is, but we learn that somebody here is going to end up dead, and we don't know who it is, and we don't know under what circumstances. But you have to read through the whole novel to find that out. And you can maybe be trying to figure it out on your own as you go. Good luck with that, if that's what you're doing. But I wanted that page-turning effect, too, in addition to all the fun dog park stuff. I wanted there to be some high stakes for readers to really be turning pages.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You did a great job with that. I love the characters. I love how you defined each one as their unique from exterior standpoint, their own unique background and who they are and their social life. But peeling back that onion as you get deeper into the book, finding out, oh, okay, there's some hidden motives. There's some hidden skeletons in people's houses. And by the way, there's some great dogs in the book. So it's a win-win.
The dogs are really the best part, let's be honest.
Always, always the case. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with author Camille Perry and talk a little bit more about the book Social Animals, and then talk a little bit about writing. Yeah, it's going to be good. So everybody hang tight. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises as a method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author Camille Perry and her book Social Animals, or I should say a novel, we'll say. I shouldn't just call everything books, but it's my show. I guess I can do that. So, Camille, when putting together the book, you talked about how you were putting this as a screenwrite, you know, going to do a script on the book, switch gears, decided, you know, I need to put this into a novel, and then you got the dog park aspect. How do you handle that as an author, switching gears? Because I can imagine you had it, as you said, you're a plotter, you know, you have it planned out, you're structured, ready to go. And then all of a sudden, okay, we're going to shift gears, and these gears are shift quite a bit.
Yeah, that's certainly true. For me, the transition wasn't terribly impossible, because generally when I write, the first thing that comes to me is dialogue. Dialogue always comes to me the easiest, and sometimes when I'm starting a novel out, I'll just have a notebook and I'll be sketching out just lines of dialogue that I know that character is saying, and everything kind of builds from there. And then I'll have them have conversations with one another so I know how they interact and sort of what about their personalities brush up against one another in a way that creates a lot of nice friction. So the fact that I had started out by writing a script wasn't too bad, because as we know, screenplays are very dialogue heavy. They're mostly dialogue. So some of the early stuff that I would have done just beginning it clean as a novel would have been a bunch of dialogue. So the transition for me wasn't too bad. It was, it could have been a lot worse, let's just say.
Yeah, and you never know. Maybe I'll just flip-flop on you here and the novel will get the attention to create the screenwriting. you know, and get it out on the
Let me tell you,
uh-oh.
this is an exclusive because I haven't mentioned this to anybody, but I've recently heard that I'm allowed to say we already sold the screen rights to Social Animals before the book has even came out. A scout had gotten their hands on the manuscript, and we ended up doing a deal. We ended up selling the rights, so optioning the rights. I should be clear, optioning the rights. They, you know, you sell an option. We
Right.
didn't, yeah. So, but the option's out there. So yeah, let's hope. Fingers crossed. One day we'll see
Yeah.
Social Animals on a screen. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Exclusive broken here on Animal Rights Show on Pet Life Radio. And I know that. I'm like Kreskin. I know all. I know these things even before I ask the question.
Good instincts.
There you go. There you go. Always trust that doggy instinct inside of you. When people pick up a copy of the book, Social Animals, and they read through it, totally enjoy it, love the characters, love the dogs, love every aspect of it. What do you hope that the readers and your fans get from the book? Is there a main goal or idea? Or if they said, hey, I got this out of it, you'd be really, really happy. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think with all my books, I really want to entertain, first and foremost. I really want people to have a good time reading my books, but I also want them to have a depth to them, a certain genuine feeling that comes with reading the book. I like to say, I hope that my books are poignant with a side of popcorn, because I like to hit both of those things. You're like, I like a nice popcorn novel, but I also need a little more. I need a little more substance, a little more sustenance. And I hope that my books do both of those things. I think ideally, if I just saw someone on a park bench reading my book, I would ultimately love to see a smile on their face.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Well, I just love to see them actually have my book. That's the key.
Well, yeah.
And they're not giving it away free to somebody else. That's all I need.
That's right.
But that's a good point. I love that. I'd love to steal that phrase. That's a fantastic phrase. I love that for sure. Well, let's talk about writing a little bit more in depth then. Obviously, as I mentioned, you are skilled, obviously trained, you know, a Bachelor of Arts from New York University. You've got a master's and studied English, and you've wore all these different hats from writing for and editing for Cosmopolitan and Esquire, writing novels, being a ghostwriter for young adults, these type of things. How do you pivot? And how do you find, is one easier than the other, or are they each fraught with challenges?
Well, I think every job and experience is fraught with its own challenges for sure. I will say these days I'm writer full time. I do some freelance writing, but nothing compared to what I used to do. And I don't work in an office anymore. So my writing job is my first and foremost only job. And that was always the goal for me. That was always the dream. So through every job I've ever had, I had always been writing on the side in whatever time I had, weekends, holidays, vacations, after work, before work. It was always with the intention to one day, maybe, fingers crossed, be able to write full time. And I've achieved that. And it's delightful that I've achieved that. I will, with one caveat, I fortunately have a spouse who has a very secure job that provides great health insurance. And, you know, she's a Capricorn. She's very good with money and planning and, you know, all that stuff that I'm not that great at. So that's one aspect of it. But yeah, I think it's important to be a well-rounded person and to have a lot of different experiences. And I encourage people, young people especially, to explore a lot of different jobs. If, you know, I think the days of someone staying at one job for 50 years is sort of over for a number of reasons. One good thing about that is that you do sort of get to use different parts of your brain and learn new skills. And I think that comes with working a lot of different jobs.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. And I would agree wholeheartedly with that. You know, sometimes it's in those early lean years, you know, it's out of necessity. You know, you're doing jobs you never looking back on, you thought, oh my gosh, how did I ever do that? Well, I know why I did, because I need the money. And then I was never good at it. I always seemed to have jobs that in those early days I was really not that good at, but people liked me well enough, so I stuck around. But your writing in general, is this something that you think dates back to your childhood days, where you were always an avid reader and wanted to write and things of this sort, or did it develop a little bit later in life?
Definitely. As soon as, I think it started before I even could read and write, because I had older sisters. My sisters are 10 and 12 years older than me. And I was very jealous when I could see them doing their homework or writing a letter. And I wasn't able to do that. So I was very, very anxious and excited to learn how to read and write. So I did learn how to read and write, fortunately. And I learned, you know, I was a good student young. So I was reading pretty young and I was always writing stories. I always had notebooks where I would create little stories for myself. And as I got older, those stories got longer and longer. That was something I just always did. It was my hobby. And my mom observed this and she, you know, I told her that I wanted to be a writer and she said, she was very practical and she said, you know, I believe that you could do it. I want you to be a writer one day, but I think you should maybe have a backup plan.
Take up computer skills, typing, something. Yeah, I understand, but that's okay. She was supportive, you know.
She was supportive and she encouraged me to go work at the local library, which I did in high school. I was a page at the local library and then I went on to get my MLS and I became a librarian. So for a number, that was the first real job that I had before I went to work in magazines. I was working as a reference librarian. And that was a fantastic job to have if what you also want to be doing is writing books, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I just love, you know, to me, I love the whole aspect. I've always loved books. I can't claim that I was ever early on, that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to play professional baseball. That's what I wanted to do. So I found out early that injuries happen and you aren't nearly as good as the other guys. So you need to shift gears a little bit. But I love the fact that you knew this early on. And you did it for enjoyment, and then you worked your way from a very early age to, you know, being who you are today, a professional writer and author and doing a fantastic job. And that, it, you know, I would say big kudos to that, sticking to what you know who you are early on and putting together a plan to get to where you want to be and beyond.
Well, thank you so much. That's really kind of you to say and warms my heart to hear. I think it's true, and I never want to be haughty or, you know, uppity, but it sometimes that gets in the way of me feeling proud of myself. So it's a good reminder. I have accomplished a lot to be proud of, and I also feel really blessed.
Absolutely. And there's more to come because, you know, we need to fill more episodes. So you got to write more and you got to come back on the show and do that. But congratulations to everything. Where can people find out more about you, your books, where you're going to be, all these wonderful things?
Yeah, I'm doing a small tour for this book, and you can see a list of all of my events on my website, which is CamillePerry.com. I'm also pretty active on Instagram, where you can find more pictures of my dog, Pip.
Oh.
And in my bio, you can also click on my link tree and get a list of all of my events and where I'll be doing readings for social animals over the next few weeks.
Nice, nice. We'll make sure we get that app there. And everybody, pick up a copy of the book. You're going to thoroughly enjoy it. Social Animals, a novel by Camille Perry. Camille, thank you so much for coming on the show. Big kudos and congratulations for another success. And yeah, like I said, I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to look forward to talking to you somewhere down the road.
You've got a deal. This was great fun. Thanks so much.
You're most welcome. All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas for the show, drop us a line. We're at PetLifeRadio.com. We'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows and hosts. It's a barking festival of fun. That's at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.